Something tells me this service is going to be a lot different than the other two. I just have that gut feeling. I have been hanging out with these incredible individuals over the last 2 days, and I got to say, it's been unlike any other church I get the tour. I truly got to say, you guys are stand above the rest. Incredible, special. We made moments that will never be forgotten. Yes, you, and I know we had a great moment last night with Coco. It was a really, really special moment. In case this is our first time meeting, because I see a lot of adults in the room, students say, what up, parents? So we got a lot of adults in the room, and if this is our first time meeting, my name is Joseph Sojourn, and my friends always called me Sojo because my last name was difficult to say, so Sojo is what you can feel free to call me, or Joseph, whichever one. It doesn't really matter to me. But I'm going to quickly catch you up because maybe some of you aren't quite sure what we talked about over this past weekend or this past few days, and so you might see us all wearing this shirt, we in... Come on, you guys got my back this morning. I love it. You might see us wearing this shirt saying we and me. And the first night we talked about this idea that every single one of us has gold on the inside. And we looked at Jesus talking to the people about this parable of the talents, that he's placed talents in every single person. I said, it's easy for us to look around and compare ourselves to each other and say, I don't have quite as much gold as the next person. I say, but God is simply looking at us and saying, hey, would you look inside you, find the gold that's in there and do something with it? Because maybe you have just one bag and your friend might have five bags. But if you can actually do something with your one bag, he'll say, well done, my good and faithful servant, and he'll begin to bless you with even more bags, and that one bag will turn to two, and that two will turn to four, and that four will turn to, goodness gracious, they're so good at math too. I said, look at what God could do. That was night one, and then we had the morning session. And mornings are never easy, but they made it easy on me. And I said, there's this idea that we're all on the hunt for more. Okay, I'll take that one. I got a little ambitious. I said, we're all on this hunt for more, and that God is saying, hey, I know you might be looking at all this stuff around you, but if you end up hunting in the wrong direction, then you'll end up finding emptiness. And I said, what if you began to hunt in the right direction and began to chase after the Holy Spirit that offers this fruit? And inside of this fruit comes love, comes patience, comes forgiveness, comes gentleness, comes kindness. And I said, so much inside of this comes peace. And I said, as people begin to see you bear this fruit, they'll begin to say, you are different. And then so many of these individuals right here said, I'm ready to go on this hunt for more. I'm no longer ready to run in the wrong direction. I'm ready to run towards this Holy Spirit, this wild goose, towards the direction of so much more that Jesus has for me. And then there was last night, and it was special. It was special because I said, I know every single one of you has issues. Every single one of you is a mess. And we said, listen, we all got to be real with each other. I'm a mess. You a mess. And I said, but all of us come in here holding our stuff. And I said, but God has prepared something for you. And you can spend all of your energy trying to hold on to all that you have stored up, all the mess and all the mistakes that you've had. Or you can spend your energy making room for all that God has in store. And I said, it's a decision. You're going to spend energy either way. Maybe you're going to spend it saying, I can carry everything else in life. I can carry my whole life by myself. But we all know that eventually you'll get tired and you'll have to face your circumstances. You'll have to face your cuts. You'll have to face your hurts, your fears. And eventually you have to say, I got to make some room. And I said, there's this beautiful thing that happens when you begin to fix your eyes on all that God has in store for you and say, you know what? I got to clear out as much space as I can for all that God wants to do and give me in my life. And there are some young people in this room right here that decided, hey, I'm going to take one step towards a life better towards it faced in that direction. And there are some other young people that said, hey, I'm going to step over this line of faith and I'm going to put my life in Jesus Christ. That happened last night, and that's worthy of some applause. That happened right here in this room. Those are your babies. That happened right here. And that leads me to this morning. Now, they tell me I got to do rap in the morning. And I was like, okay, rap at 8 a.m. They don't even go together. It was a difficult journey at the 8 a.m. service. I can't lie to you. This was drastically different than that first one. We had to work a little bit to get them to try and jump around a little bit. But then I said, if I had to put an exclamation point on what we've been talking about for the last 2 days, if I had to say what's one more thing that I would say to this group, I would say I simply share my story. Because every single one of you sitting in this room, every single person who walked through these doors is based on a true story. And my hope this morning is as you listen to my story, as you listen to the words out of my mouth and my journey, that hopefully you'll be able to say, hey, I can't relate to every circumstance. Maybe I can't relate to every single moment in his story, but I relate to that emotion. I relate to that thought. I relate to that feeling. Because every single one of us is on a journey ourselves, and every single one of us is holding a story in our hands. And the question is, are we willing to share that story with the other people that we'll bump into outside of these walls and inside of these walls? So I'll start by saying that I was doing some work with some small group leader. I was doing some work actually with my small group some years back, and I was a small group leader for about 5 years, and I loved working with my guys. And then sure enough, as I got to the end of that journey, they asked me to go on staff, and I went from being a small group leader to a small group scout. And so I went from working with students to working with the adults that work with students. So sure enough, I'd always talk to the adults, and as soon as I sit across from them at a Starbucks, I'd say, hey, can you share your story with me as to why you want to serve in our high school ministry? And they would oftentimes tell me their journey, and they would tell me what drew them to high school students. And then I'll say, that's really, really awesome. And we kind of determined if this was the right fit for them. And then I moved on to become the high school pastor. And not too long after that, my pastor came to me and he said, hey, I'd love to take you out for lunch. I said, well, I'm pretty busy today. I'm not sure if today's the best day. He said, I want it to be today. I said, absolutely, sir. I'll make it happen today. And so I was like, cool, where do you want to go? And he said, I like to go to Starbucks. I mean, I like to go to Subway. And I said, I'm not really a Subway guy. I don't really like cold cuts. He said, I really want to go to Subway. I said, Subway it is. That Subway sounds like a great place. And so I remember walking into the Subway, and I'm thinking, I don't even know what I'm going to get at the Subways. I'm not really a turkey guy. I'm not really a tuna guy. And so I got to the front. I said, I'll just do the meatball sub. He said, I'll do a meatball sub. I said, okay, that was a moment. We had a nice little moment right there. And so we get there. We get back to the booth, and we're sitting down, and he begins to ask me questions. He said, so, Joe, can you share your story with me? And I said, no, I know that trick. I'm not really trying to do that on this lunch. He said, no, I feel like I need to hear it because I've never heard it before. And I said, okay, and so I give him the generic answer because it's 30 minutes and we're at a Subway. Let's be honest, we're not trying to go too deep in this type of scenario. And he begins to poke and prod and ask me more and more about my story. And I begin to open up and take him back to my high school years, and he begins to push me a little bit more. And we get now back to my younger days. And sure enough, I begin to crack. I begin to feel emotions I haven't felt in a really long time. And then all of a sudden, I just started crying. And then he's listening to my story. He's looking at me cry. Then he's crying. Then everyone in the Subway is looking at the two guys in the back booth crying over their meatball subs as if they aren't already salty enough. And they're like, why are those two guys in the back of the Subway crying? And we're saying, because we're Christians and Christians are transparent. And I remember he said in this moment, Joe, you need to be sharing your story with more people. Why don't you share it? And I said, to be all honest, I just didn't want everybody in my business. And he said, you need to get over that. And you need to face your story. And his words began to play in my mind as I drove home. And as I laid my head on my pillow that night, where I do my best reflecting, I began to have this revelation. And it's the first revelation I want to share with you this morning. And that was simply that a story that's untold never has the chance to help anyone. And I began to say, okay, maybe I do need to face my story. Maybe I do need to learn how to share it. Maybe I do need to learn to say, this is where I come from. This is my journey as of now. My hope is as you listen to it, you might be able to say, hey, I can relate to some moments. Maybe I can't relate to all these things, but I can hopefully pull something out and say, maybe this will inspire me to begin to share my journey with other people. Now, I was born and raised in a place called Akron, Ohio. I don't know if we have anyone from Ohio in the place. O-H? There we go. We always got a few. No matter when I do it, no matter where I do it, someone always. I'm literally 100%. There was a time I was walking through an amusement park, and my friends dared me, and they said, I bet you it won't happen here. In the middle of an amusement park in North Carolina, I yell from the top of my lungs, O-H, and someone far off in the distance says, I-O, and I said, there we are. We're right over there. Don't ever question me again. Literally, we are always right there. It's our call no matter where we are in the world. I was born in a place called Akron, Ohio. Now, there's not much to say about Akron, Ohio. It was the rubber capital of the world, but all the factories closed before I hit the scene. We did have LeBron James. He started in the Cleveland Cavaliers, then he became the Miami Heat. He left us, went, came back to Cleveland, and gave us a championship, and then now he's left and he's gone to LA Lakers. That's the story of Akron, Ohio, right there in a nutshell. Now, I was raised to a single mom of three incredibly handsome young men, John, Joseph, and Justin. John being my older brother, Justin being my twin brother. My mom and my dad divorced when we were just babies, still in the womb. So I remember by the time we hit right around that third, fourth grade time, we began to always diss our dad because we were grown men and we were able to analyze adults through that lens. And we began to say, what kind of dad isn't here for our big tumultuous years? We didn't really use that word, but I like to say that on stage, just act like we were extremely educated as children. What kind of dad wasn't there for our extremely tumultuous years like this? What kind of dad wasn't there to kind of be there? And we began to get so mad because we're like, we don't have a dad. And we were looking around at everyone else's perfect families. And I remember my mom walked in one day and she said, listen, we may not understand why your dad made the decisions he did, but he is your dad and it is your job to respect him. Don't you let me catch you talking about your dad like that again. I said, yes, ma'am. She was that kind of woman. No matter the circumstance, she never said negative things about anyone. To this day, I don't know how she does it. A true pillar of excellence, a standard of Christianity that I still look at and I say, truly, truly someone that can inspire me. Now, We were raised in a part of town that people oftentimes like to refer to as the ghetto. And the thing about the ghetto is it's chock full of obstacles that might get in the way of true excellence. And so I remember there was a brand new school being built at the end of my street, and I was extremely excited because all of my friends were going to this school. It was called Schumacher. And I said, "Mom, you need to take a tour of the school because everyone else's parents are taking a tour of it too." Now, my mom was a teacher of about 35 years, so she believed in optimal learning environments. And so she said, "I'll absolutely take a tour of the school." So she scheduled it, and sure enough, about a week later, she went towards Schumacher. And I remember right before she left, I said, "You need to check out the orange lockers. They tell me the orange lockers are stunning. I can't wait for you to see them." I was so excited about these lockers, I knew it was going to sway her opinion. She comes back home, and I said, "Did you see the lockers?" She's like, "Yes." I was like, "Were they orange?" She's like, "They were orange." I said, "Do they look as good as I thought?" She said, "They look pretty good. John, Joseph, Justin, living room." I said, "Okay." That was a little bit abrupt. We get in there, and she says, "You're not going to be going to Schumacher." I said, "What?" She said, "It's not a good school. And you know I value optimal learning environments." I said, "I know you value optimal learning environments, but my optimal learning environment is where my friends are." I was passionate. I couldn't lock it up sometimes. And she said, "I know that, but you're not going to be going there. In fact, I'll need to save up money for the school that I want to send you to. So for the next year, we're going to be eating spaghetti, big pots of spaghetti every night for dinner," which is why I'm not a huge fan of spaghetti to this day. And then she said, "For lunch, we're going to be eating honey butter sandwiches, just a piece of bread with a little bit of margarine, squirt some honey, and slap another piece of white Wonder Bread on it." And that was my lunch for just about a year. It's why to this day, if I go to Cracker Barrel, they give me the biscuits and honey. I say, "Get the biscuits out my face. I'm never going back." But we did it. We did it for a year, and I can still tell you what it was like when she hopped out of that U-Haul truck, and she's like, "This is our new neighborhood, this is our new home," and my mom was running in and out of the house, loading in all these boxes, and here John, Joseph, and Justin are holding their few boxes of toys and all the things and all their belongings right there as we're looking at this new house and we're looking at this new neighborhood, and she had ripped us away from every single thing that we knew, and we didn't know how to feel, we didn't know how to be excited, we didn't know what to come, and if she was to know what was to come, I wonder if she would have been as excited also, because I can still tell you my first day of third grade. In fact, I could even tell you what I was wearing. It was a turquoise Michael Jordan t-shirt, and it said Air Joseph on the back. I thought the shirt was so cool, people would want to be my friend. And as I walked in, I had Justin right here to my right and John to my left. And I remember thinking, this school looks so, so different than everything we've ever seen. I mean, the paint was different. The lockers were not orange. Everything was just so radically different. But I remember thinking, as long as I have my twin brother, I'm going to be okay, because Justin and me, we stick closer than glue. So that's all I need at the end of the day. But my mom knew that. So she went ahead to the administration. She said, "I need you to separate Joseph and Justin from all their classes. Make sure they have nothing together so that they can make their own friends and have their own personalities." That's my mom. That's the kind of woman she is. I can't change her for nothing. We get to the intersection of the hallway, and I turn right. I said, "Justin, our class is right." He said, "No, my class is this way." And I said, "What?" And I said, "But..." And that's how my mom told us, right that, right there in the middle of the hallway, a scar that I still hold to this day, a reminder every Christmas. And so Justin went off in the distance, and I turned this way and went to my class. I remember I got to the doorway, and I just stopped, and I looked in. I remember everyone looked at me, and I just thought, this is really awkward. I put my head down, and I walked right to the back of the room. I just walked straight to the back because I knew my name was always towards the back, and I'm looking for my name, Sojourner. Finally, I find it right over here, and I sit down, and I just stare down at the desk, and I'm hoping I could just disappear. I'm hoping nobody notices me, because this is the first time in my life that I feel different. We were the first blacks to integrate Monroe Elementary. Now, people oftentimes say, "You were born during civil rights." I say, "Now, does it look like I was born during civil rights?" No. My mom just so happened to find the only school where we were the first blacks to enter. That's my mom. I can't change her for nothing. Now, I'll be honest with you, I had never seen that many white people in all my 8 years of existence. It was like walking into an REI. I said, "What in the world?" I think I'm just trying to wrap my mind around all that I'm trying to absorb right now. I mean, they had television shows that I had never heard of before. They were talking about sitcoms that I had never even watched in my life. They had songs that they were singing that I had never heard of. They had fashion choices that I just found a tad bit peculiar from where I had come from. And I remember just thinking, everything here is so different, but maybe they don't notice that I'm different. But as soon as I thought that, they would look at me and say, "No, you are different. You got a little bit of a strut to your walk," and they're like, "What's up, everybody? I'm Sojo." And what started as innocent, what started as fun, what started as curiosity, started to turn a tad bit sharper within the year. And I began to be a product of bullying. I began to be a product of people who felt like it was easier to make jabs at me than to actually try to figure me out. Now, what made things even worse was my brother was about double my size. He was a really, really big guy, Justin, my twin brother. and I had a really large head but extremely small frame. I had to grow into this thing. And so whenever Justin was near, they'd oftentimes be quiet, but as soon as Justin walked away, they would say, "Your big brother's gone." Now, here's why I hated when they said that, because I was the big brother. I was older than Justin by 15 minutes, so I oftentimes would have to remind Justin when we were in arguments, "You don't understand what I'm saying because I'm 15 minutes more mature than you are, so check back in 15 minutes." That's what I always used to say. He hates it when I say that. I literally said it to him right here at his wedding, right before he got. I said, "Listen," I was giving him wedding advice. He said, "Joe, this is the worst advice I've ever heard." I said, "You're not going to understand any of this about 15 minutes from now. Just trust me, check back, text me later," walked away. He hates it to this day, but I have to remind him, he is the younger brother. So it made me furious when they said, "Your big brother's not standing beside you." I said, "Because no, I don't need a big brother. I'm the big brother. He's no bit more a man than I am." And my head was bouncing around because I didn't have much neck support at the time. And I'm just like, no, I don't need him. I'm all the man I need to be. And if anybody wants to test me, feel free to test me. And I was ready to fight whoever wanted to step up. But I couldn't fight because my mom had made me make a promise to her, because she said it took all the money she had to get us to this school. So she made me make this promise, and I promised I wouldn't fight. And I kept that promise to my mom all the way to the fifth grade. There I was. We're sitting there. I've been working on my project for about a week and a half to 2 weeks. And the teacher stood up in front of the class and she said, "Tomorrow is presentation day." And I thought, no. I cannot give a presentation in front of this class. I get bullied too much. And so I stayed after. I said, "Listen, ma'am, I don't know if you know who I am, but my name is Joseph Sojourner. And I get bullied out in the school, and there's no way I can stand in front of this class and give a presentation. If there's any way you can just read my report, give me my A and give me my paper back, I really would appreciate that greatly." And she said, "Joseph, I did read your report, and it's excellent. And I think this class deserves to hear all the work that you placed in that paper." I said, "Well, now, I did put a lot of work into it. That is true." And I was convinced to present. The next day was presentation day. Introverts in the room, you know what I'm feeling right now. And I walked in, I'm thinking, this is the day that the Lord has made. Okay. And I find the last stall in the bathroom somewhere along my journey in fifth grade. That became my prayer stall. And so I walked in, I put my book bag down. I said, "God, this presentation day, and you know what that means. I'm about to have to stand in front of this class and talk to them. God, I pray they don't just like my report. I pray they love my report. I don't just pray they love it. I pray they give me a round of applause or a standing ovation or throw roses, whatever. God, I just pray that everything goes well. The teacher gives me an A and I can get out of there with no issues. Amen." And I walked out. And I can still tell you what the presentation was like today. I was standing there with my cardboard cutout of Joe's Rib Shack. I've been working on my menu, and I was excited to premiere my brand new item. I said, "We have fried pickles and dip." What I loved was that fried pickles were just hitting the scene, so I was trying to teach the class that I'm a student of culture, and so I already knew, and they were on my menu. And so I knew that would give me some extra credit points. Then I got to my pizzas, and I began to go through my pizzas when a hand shoots up in the back. Now, we all know the worst thing that happens when you're in the middle of giving a presentation is a question. I said, "I'm not about to answer that question. I still have a lot to get through." And so I began continuing down. "Question," he says audibly. At this point, it's a tad bit awkward because I'm still stubbornly going on, and I don't want to answer that question. And so I continue to talk. "Question." His name was Jerry. There's always one in your class. His name was Jerry. I said, "Yes, Jerry, what's your question?" And it's a question I won't forget to this day. He says, "The toppings on your pizza, do they have chitlins and watermelon?" And it wasn't the comment that made me furious. It was the fact that the entire class gasped and then erupted in laughter. And I was utterly humiliated, and I threw my cardboard cutout down, and I jumped over the desk. As soon as I grabbed Jerry, my teacher pulled at me, so I was able to shove him and get him on the ground, and then I jumped on top of him, and I'm just trying to grab his neck because I'm thinking, I will never let someone humiliate me like this in front of a whole classroom. I gotta let him know that I'm a man. I gotta let him know that I won't be disrespected. As soon as I'm getting ready to cop back and punch him, my teacher grabs my arm, and she's pulling me, and somebody's pulling Jerry, and I'm screaming because I can only see red, until finally she yanks me by the shirt, and she gets me in the hallway, and she pushes me on the lockers, and I start punching and punching in the lockers, to finally I lock back eyes with my teacher, and I say, "I told you that this would happen. Why did you make me do it?" And then I just slid down on the ground and started to cry as I heard the cackling from the class behind me as they heard me in the hallway. And I will never forget what she said to me next, because she got down right on my level and she said, "Joseph, how much longer are you going to let their words control you?" And at this point, I'm still worked up. What? I was a very passionate kid. She said it again. How much longer are you going to let their words control you? And then she just stood back up and walked back in her room and left me right there in the middle of that hallway against those lockers. And her words echoed in my mind, not just that year, but the absolutely horrid and brutal middle school years where the comments only got worse, where the bullying only got more intense, where things began to turn more physical every single day. Every single day before I'd walk out my house, I'd get to the front door, my mom would hear me turn the deadbolt. And she'd say, hey. And I'd have to say the same thing. I'd say, hey, I'm Christian first, sojourner second. She'd say it like you mean it. I'm Christian first, sojourner second. And she'd say, I see you at school. Have a good day praying for you. And sure enough, I'd walk out the house. And I remember thinking, why does she make me say that every single day before I walk out? But there I was in the seventh grade walking down the hallway. And I remember people making comments about me as I passed. And I'm hearing the comments. And I'm feeling horrible about myself. And I remember right there in the hallway, for some reason, it said something, but somebody whispered it back into my spirit. And I remember just thinking, I'm Christian first, sojourner second. I'm Christian first, sojourner second. I'm Christian first, sojourner second. But if I were to be honest, when I looked at myself in the mirror, I didn't know what I saw anymore. I didn't understand why I was so toxic. And I didn't understand why nobody wanted to take the risk to be my friend. The last person that tried was just in the fourth grade. His name was Billy, and I remember he lasted for about 2 days, and I walked in, and I caught him saying some horrible things about me, and he turned, and he locked eyes with me, and he had this horrible expression of that horrid look of saying, oh my gosh, I've been caught, and I know to this day Billy was a good person. He just didn't have enough strength to stand up against the opposition and fight for me. And I remember I just didn't say anything. I walked to my desk and sat there. We never spoke again, and it was that day that I determined I would never make someone else try to be my friend and put them in that type of scenario. So there I was. Moving through middle school, all alone. No one taking the risk of the toxic kid that nobody wanted to talk to or get to know. We now get to ninth grade. My first day, basic metals class, my teacher pulls me to the front. He says, Joseph, we hear about the bullying that's happening to you. We need you to do all your projects outside for your own safety because there's too much sharp equipment in this room. I said, absolutely. And the plan worked perfectly for about 3 weeks until one kid got sick and he had to walk him to the nurse's office, which allowed 3 to 4 boys to walk outside as I was painting my red box in the parking lot. They kicked it across in the grass and beat me that day. And I remember thinking, what am I supposed to do? I just can't seem to win. Right around that time, I got a bad grade. I got a C on a French test. And I remember thinking, there's no way that I can get another C. My mom said only A's and B's are allowed in this house. And so I stayed after to talk to the teacher. I said, hey, listen, I got to make sure I do some extra credit. I got to make sure I get a tutor, whatever it takes. I cannot get another C in this class. I got to make sure I get all A's and B's in all my classes. And she cut me off. She put her glasses down. And she said, how am I supposed to teach you French when you can't even speak English? And I just stood there. And then I said, I'm sorry. And I walked out of her room. And that was the day I quit. I quit thinking that somebody was going to bail me out. I quit thinking that somebody was going to come rescue me. I quit thinking that I was even going to catch a break. I just quit. I didn't have any more fight left in me. And in that moment, my mama saw that she was losing her boys. She knew she'd have to act fast. She set up a meeting with the principal, and she said, I'm telling them to love people. I'm telling them to turn the other cheek, but it's as if they can't catch a break. Tell me what to do. And the principal replied, ma'am, what did you think would happen when you placed them in this school? I don't know what to tell you. And that night, my mom got home. She went right to her room and shut the door, something she always did because she never wanted us to see her cry. She always wanted to be a sign of strength in front of her boys. But I knew what she was in there doing because I could hear the sobbing in her pillow. And finally, she walks out. Her eyes are still red. And she says, John, Joseph, Justin, living room. We come in, we're staring at her. At this point, we don't know what to do. Our instincts are to protect, but she's trying to protect us. And she says, I need to take you out of that school. And I say, okay, well, what are we going to do? And she says, I'm not sure just yet. And my older brother says, well, maybe we can go to Firestone. It's like 40 minutes down the road. We see it on the TV all the time. And I remember I looked at John, I said, Firestone, that's the school with the incredible athletics. That's the school with the international baccalaureate program and all the great theater stuff and all the diversity. Like, do you really think we have a shot? It's 40 minutes down the road. And I remember getting so mad, not just by his opinion, but I got upset because he had the audacity to still dream. I said, why do you think we even have a shot of making it to that school? Nothing has happened good to us since we got here in the third grade. We're now in the ninth grade, and you still have the audacity to dream? Are you crazy? And my mom said, Joseph, calm down. Maybe we'll just fill out the application and see what happens. And I said, okay, fine. I filled it out. We mailed it out, and I didn't think anything of it until about 3-4 weeks later when she calls us to her room. And she says, I want to let you hear this. There was a message left on her answering machine. Yes, answering machine, not voicemail. She hits play, and it says, congratulations. John, Joseph, and Justin are accepted to Firestone High School. And I remember thinking in that moment, what? Is something good actually about to happen to us? It's impossible. I was so far past believing something good could even happen to a kid like me. My first day at Firestone, 10th grade, I remember, same scenario, Justin to my right, John to my left. It's as if we orchestrated it, choreographed it perfectly. We walked through the front doors, I take about three steps in, and I just stop this time. I'm seeing blacks, whites, Hispanics all chatting, chumming it up in the hallways, horse playing. And I remember thinking, I've never seen a scene like this. I've never seen a hallway that looks anything like this. I just remember it was so foreign. I'm instantly uncomfortable. I put my head down. I walk past all the chaos, and I get to my first period class. I walk to the last seat I could find because the last seat's already occupied, so I go to the second last seat, and I sit down. I sit down in my first period class, and I'm hoping I could disappear just like I did again, hoping that nobody notices me, hoping that nobody would mess with me. Tap, tap, tap on my back. His name was Sean. Hey, man, you got a pencil? I said, I'm being tested. I'm being tested on day one. I said, I ain't got a pencil. Tap, tap, tap. Come on, man, I know you got to have a pencil. I said, I told you I ain't got a pencil. Elevate your voice, act a little bit crazy. They typically will leave you alone. Tap, tap, tap. Come on, man, I know you got to have a pencil in that big book bag of yours. And I said, that was disrespectful. He's already testing me. He's already trying to bully me. So I did the only thing I knew to do. I said, no, not at this school, not on day one. And I jumped up from the desk, and I knocked all the books off his desk. I said, I told you I ain't got a pencil. Don't touch me again. And I was kicked out of my first grade class, first day of school, sits in the principal's office, just like that. Boom, standing right in front of her. And she looked at me, and she said, Joseph, I know your story. And I remember I wasn't ready for her to say that. I just stopped and looked at her. I didn't say anything. And she said, I know your story, and I need you to trust us. I'm still silent. She says, I'm not going to suspend you. I'm not going to put you on detention because I know there's a good kid in there. I'll give you another chance if you just choose to trust us. Can you do that? I said, oh, in that case, yes, I can. I can trust you. She sent me back. Second day, walking into that same class. I remember I was walking by this girl. And I heard her say, ooh, is that the kid that flipped out over the pencil? He is crazy. And I thought, good. Now no one's going to mess with me. Nobody's going to bully me. And nobody's ever going to ask me for a pencil again at this school. We're now 7 years. No friends. No one even knowing my name. Pretty much a mute kid. And the thing about being quiet for that long is you learn to listen really well. Because life is happening all around you. People are having conversations, and relationships are forming and breaking all around you. You're thinking, why would he say that to her? Why would she do that to that girl? If they're supposed to be friends, why would they say that? You begin to listen not just to what people are saying, but the body language and the narrative that's happening just below the surface behind people's words. You begin to say, hey, there's always much more to conversations than I think people can listen to if they just learn to listen really well. Techniques I still use when I sit with adults and students alike. Right around this time, we're now moving to the end of 11th grade, and I remember turning a corner. And Justin was being pursued by the basketball and football team because he's about 6'7", 280 pounds. So everybody wanted him to try out, but he was too shy because we were both shy. So we had been bullied for a lot of our journey. And they had sent two of the star athletes to try and get him to crack and come to tryouts. And so they were cracking jokes with him at the locker. And I turned the corner just as Justin was laughing. And I remember I just stood there and stared at my twin cracking up with two guys. And I said, I've never in my life laughed with anyone in the hallway. And I went home that night and I said, God, I want nothing more than to have some friends that I can laugh with in the hallway. And my lights blinked, and a bearded man in a robe lowered and sat at the end of my bed. I'm lying. That didn't happen at all. I woke up the next morning to nothing. Silence once again. And I remember thinking, is anyone up there? Is anybody even listening to me? And I thought, there's got to be something I could do to begin to change my circumstances. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to choose to just smile. I'm going to choose to smile. If somebody says my name, I'm going to smile. Wait, nobody knows my name, okay? If somebody says a joke, then I'm going to smile. I'm going to laugh louder than everyone else. If somebody says or does something funny, I'm going to make sure that I have a huge grin on my face so that everybody can see that I'm not toxic, so that everybody can see that I'm a good person and I'm worthy to be friends with. And sure enough, I hit the halls, and I smiled bigger than anybody, and I continued to laugh at every single joke until two or three oddballs decided to be my friend while everyone else in the class began to call me Kool-Aid, so the plan kind of backfired a little bit, and I thought, tone down the smile, tone down the smile. But I had two or three oddballs that wanted to join me, and that was two or three more than I could ever ask for. And I remember one day I decided to walk home, walk back to my aunt's house where my mom would pick us up, drive us 40 minutes back home. And my friends were walking with me, my two friends, and the one decided to stop at a gas station, so I'm going to run in here. I said, cool, I'll wait for you right out here. And he comes out about a minute or two later, and he's holding two greasy paper towels. And he hands me one. I said, what is this? He said, it's pizza. I said, for what? He's like, for you. I was like, why? He's like, because I know you like pepperoni pizza. I said, no, but why did you get it? He said, listen, if you don't want the pizza, give it back. But it wasn't just pizza. It was the first moment I realized that I had a friend in my youth. In 12th grade, at the very end of 11th, moving into 12th. And I remember I looked at the pizza and was terrified. Because it was the first moment I realized that somebody did something for me when I wasn't standing there beside them. A foreign feeling that I had. Something I never experienced in my childhood. I travel around this beautiful globe and I get to eat some incredible food nowadays. People always ask me, what's the best pizza you've had? And I always go back to that nasty, greasy gas station piece of pizza that I had that day that tasted like heaven. I got home that night and I made a covenant to God before I even understood how covenants work. I said, God, I know my friends are going to leave me and realize that I'm toxic eventually, all two of them. I said, but if you let them stick around, if you just let them actually be my friend, I promise I'll be the best friend that they've ever seen. I promise that I'll love in ways that they've never experienced. Like, I promise I'll be able to truly, truly forgive them and be the best kind of friend that they've ever experienced. And to say that God answered that prayer would be a drastic understatement, because there I was moving into 12th grade, and it's as if my entire life there were clouds that were covering me up. And God began to move those clouds away and shine light down on me. And people began to say, hey, there's this new kid at our school. His name is Joseph. He's a really nice kid. He'll sit there and listen to all your problems. He'll even help you with all your schoolwork. You ought to get to know him because he's got a really, really great thought process. Like, you just ought to call him over your table and get to hang with him for a little bit. And I remember thinking, I don't know why people are beginning to talk to me, but I'm beginning to gain influence. People say, hey, what's your name? I hear you're the new kid. And I wasn't even new. I had been there for 3 years. Teachers began noticing me for the first time. And they said, hey, for some reason, your name is buzzing throughout these hallways. Could you lead the book club? And I remember thinking, I've only been popular for about 1 month. I said, I don't know if I want to use my popularity for the book club. I feel like that's a risky trade. I was easily influenced. And so sure enough, I said yes. And people began to read books. And I began to say, I can't believe I'm getting everyone to read books. I can't believe people are beginning to listen to me and saying, okay, I'll sign up for just 2 books this semester. I didn't know what it was. My voice was new. I remember thinking, okay, I want to start learning how to talk. I mean, I was comfortable talking to somebody one-on-one if they came to my table, but I wasn't comfortable talking to 3 or 4 people. I mean, that was a thought that literally terrified me, made me shake. I would literally begin to have severe anxiety. So I signed up for theater. I said, maybe theater will help me learn to break out of my shell. I remember first day of theater there and getting to the end of my 12th grade year, and he said, can everybody share what you're here for? And sure enough, they were like, I'm here for movies one day. I want to do TV. I want to do Broadway. I want to do Cleveland Playhouse. And it's going through everybody. I'm thinking, wow, these dreams are awesome. Wow, that's really great goals that they're setting here. And it gets to me, and I'm at the very end where I usually am. And he said, Joseph, what are you here for? And I said, I'm here to learn how to talk. And the whole class did, hmm? And he said, what? And I said it again in my whisper. I said, I'm here to learn how to talk. And he just locked on me. And he said, you don't talk much. I said, no, sir. He said, then I imagine you got a lot to say. And I said, I don't know. I guess that's what I'm here for. And from that moment on, he didn't let me take the easy route out. He began to say, hey, listen, I want to ask you this question. I want to know what you think. I want you to try out. I want you to give it a go. I want you to get out of your comfort zone. It got to the place where I was like, okay, ease up. I don't really want to do so much so fast. Just take it easy on me. But he didn't take it easy on me. He continued to yank excellence out of me at all costs. And I remember he said, I want you to try out for Romeo and Juliet. I said, okay. He was like, I want to cast you as Mercutio. I said, that sounds awesome. He said, one more thing. You will have to wear tights. I said, wait a minute. Hold on. Slow down. Time out. I didn't know. I just got popular 1 month ago. Or I did the book club. I can't do book club and tights. It's just a tough trade. I began to try out for Mercutio, and I said, hey, you guys should come see all two of my friends. I said, you guys should come see me. They said, we're not going to see Romeo and Juliet. I said, well, you guys, at least I'm in it. I still don't want to go see it. And I remember going back to him, and I said, my friends don't really want to see this movie. I think it's because there's not a lot of inclusiveness in here. I mean, it's not a lot of black roles. I don't think they really connect with this one. And I was like, do you think maybe down the road we can look at more inclusive plays that everyone can feel more comfortable coming to? He said, listen, I would love to do that, and I think this school is primed for that, but we'd have to make sure everybody was bought into theater before we could begin to truck down that road. I said, so if we can get people to come to Romeo and Juliet, do you think we could really look for it for next year? He said, absolutely. I said, okay. And I began to hit the hallways with my brand new voice of about 1 month, and I began to say, hey, listen, if you all buy tickets to Romeo and Juliet, we could do something different. Maybe something that's never been done in the school before. And we sold out the first day. We added a second day. We sold out the second day. We added a third day. We sold out a third day. And to this day, Firestone High School does all-inclusive plays so that every single person in the school has a voice. And I remember thinking, what in the world is beginning to happen? We're now about midway through my senior year, and I'm beginning to see God use me in ways that I've never been used before. And at this point, I begin to trek into spaces all the way out of my comfort zone. I remember I went to a Black United Students meeting, and I remember sitting in the back, and I remember listening to all this frustration. It was hopes, dreams, and aspirations, yet they had all these things that were standing in the way, and they're voicing all these frustrations. I remember thinking, this is so educational. I would have never been in such a room like this before. And I raised my hand in the end, and I'm testing out my new voice. I said, this is really, really interesting. This is really good. Why are there no whites in this room? And they said, because it's Black United Students. I said, oh, that is true. The name will kind of weed the whites right out. I didn't think about that. I said, but if we have hopes, dreams, and aspirations as well as frustrations, they have hopes, dreams, and aspirations as well as frustrations, why don't we all get in the room? I mean, if we all have to walk these same halls together, why don't we all begin to have a different kind of conversation? Why don't we all begin to fight for each other in a whole different way? Maybe we should take the Black off it and just call it United Students. And the teachers looked at me and they said, you're crazy. And I was crazy. And I hit the halls because I knew elections were about 2 months away. And I said, I got to find the right person. I think there's the right person to lead this tomorrow. And I finally lock eyes with Laura, and I walk up to her in the hall. And I said, listen, I think you're the president of Black United Students. I need you to consider it. I think you listen to people well. I think you care. I think everyone knows that you care. You have the capacity to love in ways that I don't think I've seen in most students. I think people really respect you. Laura, I need you to let me help you design a campaign to be the president of Black United Students. She said, listen, I would love to be the president of Black United Students. The only problem is, Joe, I'm white. I said, that's true. And that is a mountain we're going to have to climb together. I said, but you listen, and you love, and you care about each person. I said, I think when you begin to talk to them and they realize who you are, they won't even notice you're white. She said, really? I said, well, maybe a little bit. Election day. I remember walking in. I walked right to the back of the room, stood in the back. I was too afraid to stand anywhere else. A room full of whites, blacks, Hispanics, all holding hands. I remember thinking, what's happening? The teachers filed in with the ballots, and the teacher finally got to the front, and she said, you're a new president of Black United Students, or as you all voted to rename it, United Students, is Laura. And the room erupted, and everyone began hugging each other and high-fiving. I remember I'm standing in the back, and I'm just speechless. I don't know what to think. I'm standing against the wall, and Laura walks her way right to the front of the room in front of everyone, and she locks eyes with me, and she walks right down the center aisle, and she just grabs me. She grabs me, she hugs me, she starts crying on my shoulder, and she's whispering, look at what we did, look at what we did. And I'm thinking, I don't even know what we done. I'm overwhelmed with emotion. God had never done something with me before. I remember I tell people all the time now, listen, when you go through most of your childhood with no friends, you just dream for people. And it would take most of my adulthood before I realized that maybe God put me on this planet to dream for people, something that I fight for every single day of my life now, and tell people, yeah, my story might not be perfect, but I think it's what made the man and what gives me the perspective to say, let no one feel devalued, no matter what story they may hold. Not too long ago, I got a chance to go to the Waffle House in Atlanta. In fact, I go pretty much every week if this was a safe place to be transparent on. And so I'm sure enough, I walk in and they all know my order. It's an all-star special. If you know the Waffle House, you know that's a great breakfast option. So I'm sitting there and there's this woman sitting beside me right there at the breakfast bar. And so she's a bit disheveled, which is common for Waffle House because a lot of people like to have a little nightlife activity and then come for the Waffle House afterwards. And so I remember I looked at her and I thought, this probably is not the best person to try and strike up a conversation with. She looks a tad bit tired. And so I just looked back forward and I placed my order and I immediately began to feel convicted. I said, okay, you could do something, Joe. And so I said, hey, I didn't catch your name. I said, what's your name? She said, Ann. I said, oh, I'm Joe. Nice to meet you. And she said, nice to meet you, Joe. I said, oh, okay, that was nice. I said, got it. That was two points. Okay, good. And then about 5 minutes later, she said, Joe, what do you do? I said, oh, well, I work with churches, actually. She said, oh, churches. I said, okay, there's breakfast. There we go. I just want to eat my waffle. And she begins to unpack all her issues with the church. She said, oh, I went to a church one time and they judged me. Here's why I don't like Christians, because they think that they're perfect. The Christians, when you walk in those churches, they'll size you up. I mean, if you look like me, they'll say, you don't fit in with us, and nobody will talk to you. You'll just end up walking out by yourself. And I felt worse walking out of a church than I felt walking anywhere else. Those people are by far the most fake. They don't forgive. And she's going on and on and on. And I just cut her off. And I said, Ann, do you think every church is bad? And she just stopped. And she said, well, no, probably not every church. I said, okay, I guess that's what I just wanted to ask. And she said, now, wait, I'm not saying I don't love Jesus. I mean, I tell people all the time, I tell my friends, you need Jesus. I said, okay. And then she said something that rocked my world. She said, and I'm a firm believer that the most called people in the church aren't even the ones that stand on the stage. Ooh. I had to put my fork down. And I looked at her, I said, what did you say? And she said, I'm a firm believer that the most called people in the church aren't even the ones that stand on the stage. And I reached over and I grabbed her hand and I said, Ann, we need you at our church. She said, what? I said, we absolutely need you at our church. And she said, why? I said, because we don't have your story at our doors and we need your story. Right around that time, my favorite waitress, Twy, was coming and she was refilling her coffee. And she said, girl, go to that boy's church. It's a really good church. I said, come on, tag team. I'll double your tip today. I paid not too long after and I got up and I walked out, and Ann decided she wasn't done. So she followed me. As I'm walking out, Ann says, you know what? I'm going to go to your church. Because if it's anything like you, then maybe it's a good church after all. I said, oh, Ann, my church is way better than me. She said, okay, where is it at? And I told her where it was at. She asked what times. I said, 9, 11, 12:30. She said, it must be a pretty big church. I was like, it is, full of great people. And she said, okay. And she began to walk off to her car. And if I could have told Ann one more thing, because I run that story back through my head so many times, what could I have said? I would have told her, Ann, if you knew my story, you'd understand why I connect with yours so much. And if you knew the church that I get to fight for every week, as I look at a generation that knows how to love better than we ever could, that understands every single person has gold on the inside, that understands you can hunt in all the wrong directions, but we can let our friends know and the ones that feel devalued that, hey, maybe you're looking for more, and I think you got to look this way, and I got the perfect place I can invite you to. And if you knew the faces that I get to look at every week, city to city, state to state, the ones that come up to me after service and have conversations and share what's happening in their life, and if you just knew what I get to see, it would shatter your perception of what you think the church is. If you could just look in their eyes and see how they fight, see how they love, see how they walk. She got in her car and she drove and she let her window down. And she said, I don't know what made me say all the things I said to you. I never tell somebody all that at a Waffle House. And I told her, I know why. Because you ran into the church that made you confident enough to simply be who you were and comfortable enough to share your story with me. I said, and Ann, we need your story. My friend said she came and said we treated Ann like a VIP. And I'm looking in your eyes before I walk out these doors. I'm looking in your eyes, and I'm saying, what kind of church do you want this to be? What kind of church are we called to make this? Because as you walk out these walls, as you walk back into your communities, onto your teams, into your jobs, back around your friends, I understand they won't look like you. I understand you're going to be tempted to judge books by their cover. You might say, I don't quite line up with the people like there or over there. But I'm telling you, somebody needs to be asked what their name is. because I was never given that luxury. I was never given the chance to tell somebody my story. And I'm saying, leverage the story that God's given you. I know it might be messy. I know it might not be perfect. I know it may not be like your friends, but you are based on a true story. And the gift you have is to take that story and say, let me share mine. Why? Because I want you to see it and see that it's not perfect. And then you can share yours with me. And then we can go to a place where we begin to fix our eyes on something much greater than us. Because when your story connects to a greater story, well, you begin to see life through a totally different lens. And you begin to realize chapters that are going to blow your mind. What kind of church are we going to be? What kind of church are you? As we walk out this room, are we willing to use our stories? Are we willing to look at those throughout our communities and say, we need your story within these walls? Because every single person has gold, and everyone's story is worth hearing. Sometimes we got to climb the highest mountains to find them. Sometimes we got to get down in the lowest valleys to grab them and pull them out. And sometimes it's as easy as a piece of pizza. Let me pray for y'all. God, I'm looking in the eyes of fighters. The ones that aren't going to quit. The ones that are willing to love differently. The ones that understand the worth of this building. God, I thank you that we got to just share just a few days together. God, to the person in here who's too afraid to ever share their story, who's never shared it with their friends, who thinks that they're messed up or thinks that they're not worth loving or thinks that their value is just at an all-time low, I pray that they be remembered. These two things, that they're made in your image and that Jesus died for them, which makes them priceless. Something that we want every single person to know as we bump into them, no matter their difference. And God, as this church charges out these walls, I pray we transform this community so that when our work is done, they may say, oh, Christians, those are the ones that found me at the top of my life and cheered for me greater than anyone else, that met me down in my lowest moments and helped yank me out. Those are the ones that carved time out of their schedule to grab pizza, to grab coffees, and grab hamburgers and just say, I want to know your name. Because behind that name lies a beautiful story, a story worth hearing. And I'd love to then share another story that when connected to yours, allows you to be something that maybe you can't even imagine. We thank you for your love, a love that you gave us first through your son Jesus, that we will in turn go out and give to every single person that we meet. And it's in that authority and love that we say together one last time, amen. I love y'all.